Thank you, everyone, for joining this talk. So I'm Lakshmikant Upadhyay. So I have around 9.5 years total experience in software industry, and for last 4 years I've been working on Cassandra administration part. I'm working as an architect and Cassandra subject matter expert at Ericsson. So I'm currently leading the Cassandra team of NGVS product at Ericsson. So I would like to talk about a little bit about my product. So we have over 140 customer deployments across the world, and we have very diverse customer base, like with different cluster setup, like single DC to multi DC, Jira setup with different cluster size from 3 node small to 30 node cluster, and some of them are planning to scale up to 80 nodes. We have customers on different Cassandra versions as well, from 2 dot, some of them are on 2.0, some of them are on 2.1, and some of them are using latest 3.11. And we provide deployments on small VM as well as heavy bare metal setup as well. So the way we do is, like, we ship our product which has Cassandra embedded in it to the customers, and our product runs on the customer environment, and whenever they face any issue, they reach out to us. So we provide them 24/7 support. So today I'll be talking about telling you stories, some of the interesting issues which we have faced in our production system, as well as in our internal systems, where things didn't go the way it should go, and how we have handled it. And so every story will have some lessons to take away. So my first story is about disk crunch. So before I tell my story about disk crunch, I would like to talk about the approaches to handle a disk crunch issue. So when we have a disk crunch, so we have two options. Either we can add some disk space, or you can reduce the existing disk usage, right? So while adding the space, I mean, you can add some new disk, and you can move SS tables of your some of the column family to that disk, and you can mount that disk to the particular directory to replace it, and that's how you are saved. Or you can also use Cassandra JBOD feature, but these are short-term approach, and only in case of emergencies, and these are not advisable, because what we are trying to do here is we are trying to grow our node vertically, but Cassandra is a database which is meant to scale up horizontally. So rather we should add a new new node, right? And why when we add a new node, we should not forget to run a node tool cleanup. Well, but if we do want to grow our disk space vertically, we should make sure that we also add some RAM as well as additional CPU power. Otherwise, we'll fall into another series of troubles. Well, now if the disk crunch issue is kind of unexpected, so that means we have not done our capacity planning properly. We might not have considered the compaction overhead while doing that. Now, in most of the time, you don't have option to add disk or add some space. So what we are left with is to reduce the existing disk usage, right? So I got a call from my customer unit team. Like, one of our customer is getting high disk usage alarm for last 2 days. So my first reply was, okay, have you checked the list snapshot output? So if you have, like, lots of snapshots there, you just move it to the backup location and you just delete it. Or if you have temporary SS table files from the old compaction, we can delete it as well. Or if you have lots of tombstones and it is not getting evicted soon, so we can do some compaction tuning. We can enable unchecked compaction and to allow single SS table compactions. And along with that, we can also have to set the optimal value for tombstone threshold by checking that how much droppable tombstones we have in our cluster using SS table metadata utility. We can remove any other file apart from SS table which is there in the disk, right? Now, in case of emergencies, sometimes you need to truncate some unused table, or unused table means those which are non-critical, right? And the truncate command does not cause too much stone. That's why we use it. Now, if your high disk usage is because of repair, so probably it is caused by the anti-compaction which runs after post repair. And if it is bothering you, then it's better to use sub-range repair. So we have some tools, like in Ericsson, we have developed the EC-Cronus plugin which helps in sub-range repair. From TLP we have Reaper, and there is one Cassandra range repair Python script is available on GitHub. Cassandra Sidecar also uses this sub-range repair as well. So we have lots of options. Now, we should also think about the compaction strategy which we are using. So, if you are using STCA, so in worst case, it might require disk space up to 40% or 60%. So, 40% to 50%. So if we have limited disk space, we might try LCS. But again, having said that, the disk should not be the only factor to choose compaction strategy. We should also think about what data access pattern we support, whether we have read heavy or write heavy load, or how is our data, whether it's a time series data with TTL, then probably the TWCS would be good fit for us. Now, if you're using TWCS and we have only append-only data, then it is safe to remove old SH table which has crossed the TTL value, and we can reclaim the that's how we can reclaim the disk space. Now, sometimes the Bloom filter's file size becomes too big. So it may be because you have set the Bloom filter FP chance ratio to very low value. So we can increase that to resolve this issue. Now, if you have big SS tables with high droppable tombstone, then we can use node tool compact command with hyphen user defined option to do the compaction at file level also. Well, now I'll talk about our disk crunch story. So in one of our cluster, we had lots of SS tables, and the disk usage was crossing 80%. The compaction strategy we were using STCS, and it was because it was too high, so it was failing as well. So the root cause analysis we done, and we found that there were some big SS tables were there which were not getting compacted for months, and there was delay in tombstone eviction, and the compaction was also lagging behind. So as a resolution, we have so first thing what we did, we moved SS table of some of the unused table to separate disk to make some room for compaction. The next thing what we did, we made some tuning at compaction level to make it a little bit aggressive. So we reduced the minimum threshold value, and we also increased the compaction throughput. And the last thing we did is we enabled unchecked tombstone compaction, and that's how we resolved this issue. Now, the next story is about latency. So it's about read and write latency. So before I tell my read latency story, I would like to talk about what are the reasons we have read latency in Cassandra. So in Ayurveda, there is a saying that all your disease begins in the stomach. So I believe in Cassandra also, most of the problems begins with white partition. So we should check our data model carefully. Now, your read latency may be because of you might be using bad queries like allow filtering or in clause, or you might not have chosen your SS, you might not have created your SS table wisely. So you might have created SS table on a field which is unique, or which has very low cardinality. So that thing we should avoid. Or if you are seeing that more number of SS table being touched in node tool table histogram output, or you see that very high Bloom filter false positive count, then again it's a indication of slow read. Now, if your garbage collection is not under control and you have network latency, this can again cause an issue. And sometimes if we have multiple DCs and we are and our local node is waiting for response from the remote DC, then again this will cause the issue. And it can be because we have chosen a wrong consistency level, or it may be because of blocking read repair as well. Now at system level, you can have insufficient cache, or there can be some hardware level issue which can cause the read latency. Now, after read latency, I would like to talk about some the cause of write latency. Like in Cassandra, use of SAN and NAS is considered as anti-pattern, so we should avoid that. And it doesn't cause only write latency, but it will cause read latency as well. Now, if we are using batches and it is of big size, then it will cause latency at the coordinated level. Now, if you are storing files and big blobs without breaking them into smaller chunks, then again it's an issue. Now, if you are facing network latency, especially the cross DC latency, then again it's an issue. Now, GC pauses, if it is not under control, it will cause read and write latency both. Now, you might run out of write threads, so the node tool tpstats command can indicate easily that you are running out of threads. And if the compaction is running for too long, or the compaction and repair is consuming lots of resources, then again it's an issue. Or probably you have a bottleneck at CPU level. You might be running Cassandra instance which has a few cores, so that can cause an issue. Now, as an administrator, when you are troubleshooting read and write latency issues, these are the few pointers which you can check, and it can help you in the right direction. So now, I'll tell you our story of slow read issue. So we upgraded our system from 2.1 to 3.11, right? And we started facing this slow read issue. And we checked, like, there was no wide row, the queries were normal, there was no secondary index, the GC were fine, there was no network latency, no cross DC traffic. And we checked our table histogram, the SS table count, you can see, was very under control, it was 1 or 2. But the read latency was at the higher end. It was around 5 to 6 times higher than our with the previous version. Now, I also checked the recommended production level settings which we do for Cassandra, and those were also fine. Now, as an administrator, at this point you start getting nervous, like what's going wrong, why there is a read latency. Then we checked the IO stats, and the read bytes per second was quite high. It was going up to 5 GB per second. And we checked this with IO top command. It's a nice command to tell you like which process is eating up all your memory. So it was Cassandra only. So at this time, I had an impression that it might be the Cassandra version which I'm upgrading to might have some issue with that. But then I ran this blockdev command to check the read ahead value, and it was 4 MB. So it shows 8102, which represents the blocks, number of blocks, but which is equivalent to 4 MB. And it was surprising for me because I told you, like, I checked the production level setting as well. And the way I checked it, we have like this in RC local file, Linux RC local file, I set this read ahead value as 8 KB, but it was 4 MB here. And so we were actually, what we were doing, we are not only upgrading Cassandra, but we were also upgrading RHEL as well from 6 to 7. So can you can anyone guess what could have gone wrong? Why this RC local, this 8 kb didn't reflected in the system? Any guesses? So, like, the issue was in RHEL 7, this RC local didn't have the execute permission, and this caused the entire issue. So the lesson here is, like, if we are upgrading, so we should not only look at the Cassandra end, but we should also look at the layer which surrounds Cassandra. It may be your client application, or it may be any change in OS level. So while troubleshooting the issue. And okay, so the next story is about a corrupt SSTable story. So there can be many causes which can cause SSTable corruption. For example, if you have sudden power cut or your disk become completely full, if the compression is disabled and there is a bit flip issue on the disk, if you are running repair on the mixed version cluster, it can cause SSTable corruption. Using virtual disk on SAN or NVMEs on old Linux kernel has often caused this SSTable corruption. Or if you have dropped a column and you have re-added it with the same name and with different data type, this has also caused a problem to us. Or probably you have some bad sector on a disk. Now in our case of SSTable, so the SSTable corruption happened due to sudden power cut on one of the node of our cluster, and our repair starts failing. We couldn't run repair. So the first approach we follow, it standard documented approach, is you run node tool scrub, but unfortunately it was failing. We then ran offline scrub. It was again unfortunately failing, and in 80 to 90% cases, your offline scrub works well, but this time it didn't work. Now, in the approach 3, what I have taken is, we remove the corrupt assist, we find out which file is got corrupted, and we removed it, and we ran the repair, and the repair ran successfully, and I was happy, but it caused a different issue. It caused deleted data to get reappeared again with this approach. So why it happened? The reason was, the file which I deleted from one node was carrying a tombstone, and I was using LCS compaction, and in LCS compaction the tombstone doesn't get evicted until it reaches to the highest level. So that SSTable was carrying tombstone, and there was old data there on the last level, the L2 level, right? And this node B and node C, the tombstone got evicted. So now after repair, the old data got replicated to all the nodes, and that's caused this resurrection. So the lesson is, like, the point here is, why the tombstone got evicted away? Because the GC grace period was crossed. So this approach 3, is only safe when you have not crossed the GC grace period. But if our cluster is, if our cluster has tombstones and our repair is failing, the first step we should do is to increase the GC grace period for safety. But In this case, if we are stuck in such situation where we have purgeable tombstone and we got this corrupt SSTable issue, so the safest way is to clean that node and bootstrap it again. Now, my next story is about audit logging in Cassandra. And so from our customers, so they had a query like, they wanted to know that which query got executed through SQL SH on our Cassandra cluster. So we gave a simple solution, like we have a history table, you can refer to that. But they also wanted that who ran that query and when the query got run. So they wanted it urgently, so we provided a small patch on SQL SH which will add this information in history table, the timestamp as well as the username. And later on, we developed EC Audit plugin, which do the easy audit logging in Apache Cassandra. So you will have all the information, like it will log timestamp, it will log client, like from where the query is coming, it will log user, status, and the query itself. And so you can deploy it as a plugin in Cassandra 2.2.x, 3.0, and 3.11. In Cassandra 4.0, we already have a feature of audit logging, but there is no way to get this feature in lower version. So this is a good plugin to, if you want this feature, you can use it. Now, by default, it will audit log all the queries, but if you want to you can also whitelist some users if you don't want to audit them. It will also obfuscate some sensitive information. For example, if you're running a query to just change the password of existing user, it won't log the password as a plain text in your file. It will obfuscate it and then it will log it. So at the back end, it uses SLF4J. It also supports Chronicle Queue, and you can write your own logger as well if you want. And how we can deploy it? It's very easy. You just drop the jar on the Cassandra lib directory and change some little configuration in Cassandra YAML and Cassandra in.sh and restart, and that's all. And where can you get it? So you can get it. It's open source. It's available on GitHub. It's available on Maven as well. So you can use it and contribute to it. Now, so my next story is about upgrade. So three or four slides, I'll be talking about some of the uncommon issues which we have faced during upgrade and how we have handled it, and some of the lessons which we should learn while, some of the advices while planning for Cassandra upgrade. So, okay. So we had an old cluster where the Cassandra authentication was enabled, but the authorization was not enabled. And we wanted to enable that, the authorization feature of Cassandra during upgrade. So how you do you enable this authorization is you just have to change the authorizer field from allow all authorizer to Cassandra authorizer, and your authorization will be enabled. But as soon as you do this change and you restart the Cassandra, your traffic will start failing with unauthorized exception. But what happens is, like, when you enable authorization by default, it doesn't give any permission to the user. But we wanted to upgrade without any traffic failure. So what resolution or kind of trick we did, we provided, so before upgrade, we provided a super user permission to the user one. And after upgrade, we granted him the user specific permission, and we revoked the super user permission. And that's how we upgraded the entire cluster without single traffic failure. So the next issue is how we handled native protocol version during upgrade. So I think most of you must be knowing what is native protocol version. It's a protocol between the client driver and the Cassandra node. So when you are planning to upgrade from one version to another, this client protocol version may change. So during upgrade, when you have mixed version cluster, so this protocol version will be negotiated with the first node your client tries to connect to. So if it will try to connect to the upgraded node, so if it tries to connect to non-upgraded node, then everything is fine. There won't be any problem. But if your client tries to connect to the upgraded node and the protocol protocol is negotiated to the higher level version, then the client application will ignore rest of the non-upgraded node, and it will only recognize the upgraded node. And in this case, what happens if your upgraded node goes down? You'll start having a traffic failure. So to get rid of this solution, the documented solution is like what you should do. You should, before upgrade, you should change the protocol version to the, you should set the protocol version to the lower level at client side. But like the issue was that in our old client application, this protocol version was not configurable. So we couldn't do that. So the hack what we used is, so before upgrade, we removed the node to be upgraded from the contact point of the client application. So what will happen is, like, if client application get restarts, it will always connect with the the lower version Cassandra only. And so the point is, like, how many context points you can remove. The answer to this question is, like, it depends on how many node failure you can afford. So if you have a 3-node cluster and with replication factor 3 and you are using quorum consistency, that means you can support only 1-node failure. So in this case, you just need to remove. So if you have 3 hosts in your contact point, you just need to remove the first node which you are going to upgrade from the contact point, and then you will be able to handle this issue. Now I'll be talking about some of the tips which we should follow for a stress-free Cassandra upgrade or a very smooth Cassandra upgrade. So the first thing is, like, we should do our open Jira ticket analysis on the on the Cassandra version which we are you are planning to upgrade. So there should not be any open critical Jira ticket which should be impacting your application. We should also find out answer of following questions. Like, we should ask whether there is any change we need to do at the driver level, or will there be any API level change as well at my client application, or do we need to take an intermediate upgrade? For example, you cannot upgrade directly from 2.0 to 3.11. You have to have an intermediate intermediate upgrade also. Like, do we need to run upgrade assistable post upgrade? So again, that depends, like, whether we are doing a minor version upgrade or major version upgrade. So if we are doing a minor version upgrade, and even if there is a even if you are doing a minor version upgrade and there is a assistable level change, you need to run upgrade assistable. Now, as I just talked, like, how you are going to support your native protocol version. So now the next homework is, like, we must read the changes.txt of the and as well as the news.txt, especially the news.txt which gives the general advice on what need to do while you are upgrading to this this Cassandra version. And the next two homework is very common but very important. So first is, like, you should have some automation tool for doing Cassandra upgrade. I mean, definitely you won't be able to do it manually. And the next is, like, you should test your cluster well before you are going to production. So when you are testing your cluster, the upgraded version cluster, you should not only follow test the write flow and read flow, or the read latency and write latency. We should also focus on how our repair and compaction is behaving, how the bootstrapping and the decommissioning part is behaving, or how Cassandra behaves when I'm trying to replace a node. So we recently done upgrade from 2.1 to 3.11.2, and we found two issues. One of them was like our Cassandra, the repair was, so during repair, we were getting out of memory issue, and the issue was that it was because of unbounded validation compaction issue, this Cassandra 14.3.3.2. The next problem was related to counters. So while in a mixed version cluster, while doing upgrade from 2.1 to 3.11.2, the counters were not working. I mean, you were not able to update counters. So these two issues we had faced just in the functional test itself. We should not we should avoid any activity which involves streaming during upgrade, as well as we should avoid executing DB operations like DDL and DCL in a mixed version cluster. Now, next I'll talk about the downgrade. Well, like in Cassandra, the downgrade is not recommended. Like if you're planning to fall back to the lower version, you're gonna have data loss, and it will depend that how much time you have already passed since you have done the upgrade. Now, because Cassandra has upgrade assistable utility, but it doesn't provide any downgrade assistable utility. Now, so if you do want to downgrade your Cassandra version, so the steps are steps are there. Like you just need to stop the Cassandra, install the older Cassandra version, you clean the data and restore the snapshot from the older version, reconfigure the system and start the Cassandra. Or you can follow an experimental approach, the way we have followed in one of our case. So we have created our own downgrade assistable utility. So it called Casco, which is developed by Marcus Olson, one of our colleagues. So currently it is supporting downgrade assistable from 3.0 to 2.2. If you have such tool, then you won't have any data loss issue if you are planning to downgrade. But again, it has its own development cost. Now, okay. So my next story is about, this is the second last story, is about replacing a node. So in one of our cluster, one node died, and so we had to replace it. So we have a job which does this this task. So we triggered this job, and we this job failed by this. So we got this runtime exception, and it says that cannot replace address because it does not exist in gossip. Well, the reason was that while this node was down, this node was dead, the rest of the node got restarted and it lost the gossip information about the dead node. And that's why we were getting this error. Now, and I was in a hurry, and I wanted to start this node as soon as possible, because in our case we support one node failure. And because this node was down, I wanted to start it as soon as possible. So I just quickly looked into the net and to check that if someone else has faced similar issue or not. And yeah, so I got a accepted answer on Stack Overflow, and it's a very simple solution. It's a three-step solution. It says that you just identify the node which is dead, and you just remove the node and clean the data directory from the failed node, and you bootstrap it again. Well, I followed these three steps, and again it failed with some different error. Now the error was Cassandra does not use new style tokens. Now, as an administrator, you at this time you start getting frustrated, because you want to do it, you know, as soon as possible, but you're getting errors one after another. So actually the reason was that while I was in hurry, I overlooked a word called brand new in this step. So it says that bootstrap it as a brand new one. Now, I forgot to remove the replace address parameter from Cassandra env.ss from the field node, and that's what was causing the issue. So after removing that parameter, I got the third issue. So this time another error. So this time it says, but this time the error was very self-explanatory. It says that a node required to be moved data consistently is down. And the reason was that one of the node was down. I just had to start that again. But it also, this error also says that you can, if you want to, you know, you can anyway bootstrap this node by using this flag. Cassandra consistent range movement equal to false. But my advice would be that we should not use this flag if you are worried about our data consistency, because it can cause data inconsistency in your Cassandra cluster. Okay, so the lesson learned here is like when we are following some administrative steps, we should do it, you know, we should not do it in hurry, and we should not ignore a single word while following the, you know, administration process. And the better way is like, because it's a manual error, and we should probably automated it, but everything you cannot automate, right? We already have automation script for replacing a node, but sometimes you have to jump into the, you know, node and you have to check what's the error is. And the another important point is like, we should not use this replace address parameter, rather we should use replace address underscore first boot parameter to avoid such kind of silly mistake. Now this second last story is about removing the node. So it's like we replaced the node in a Cassandra cluster, but the node tool status was showing the dead node, the node which we have replaced as a dead node in node tool status. And one of the observation was that it was dead, but its host ID was null. So, and if you read the documentation, it says that if you want to remove that dead node, the steps are like you have to first try with node tool remove node command, and then if it doesn't work or if it gets stuck, you choose you run remove node force command, and if it doesn't work, then you try assessing it. But we couldn't run node tool remove node command because this remove node command requires host ID, and host ID in our case was null. So we tried with the node tool assessing it, and it failed with null pointer exception. We ran it multiple times, but it didn't work. But sometimes when you have this kind of stale entry issue, sometimes your rolling restarts helps. But unfortunately, in this case, the rolling restart of cluster also didn't work. We were still having that entry with down node there in the node tool status. So, but we had one observation, like in peers table, there was one stale entry for that that node. So what we did was we removed that stale entry from the peers table and restarted the node, and this resolved our issue. But but the caution here is like we should be, it's a kind of warning, like we should be very extra cautious while playing with the Cassandra system table. It is one of the, you know, rare issues where we have modified Cassandra system level table. So if you if you care about your data, a Cassandra cluster, we should not touch system level table which Cassandra uses. So my last story is about backup. So We use Cassandra snapshot backup, and we periodically copy the snapshot to the backup location using dd command. The issue is that, you know, every time you have to copy the entire data to the backup location. So for example, if I have a 500 GB data in a node, so every night at 2 p.m. I have to copy 5 GB data to the backup location, and this is for only for one node. And if I have 30 node cluster, again, so it is causing unnecessary high disk IO, and it chokes the network as well. Now, the standard documented resolution is that you can enable. So Cassandra provides a incremental backup feature also. So if you enable it, so you will be just be copying the incremental SS tables. But it has its own issue. The issue is it is very hard to restore those SS tables, because it will while restoring it will trigger lots of compactions. So I looked around the solution what other people are using. So I got to know one of the interesting the solution which InstaCluster is using. What they do is they have a InstaCluster backup tool, and they just copy the delta part. They have a InstaCluster backup tool. So it will check if the file already exists in the backup location. It won't copy that SS table file. It will only copy the new SS table file from the snapshot. And so they have a So what they do, if the file already exists, they will simply refresh the modification timestamp of that SS table. So it avoids the deletion of that SS table file from the cleanup process. So they have if you have a cleanup process which checks that, okay, if the SS table is 2 days old, then you just delete it. So that's why they just refresh the modification time to avoid this deletion. So that's how they support TTL-based backup, but in our case, what we do, we tell customers we don't give this TTL-based backup support. What we do tell customer that, okay, you can have X number of backup in your backup disk, so one or two or three backups. So to do that, we have done a small change in this tool. So what we are doing, so you have copied all your SS snapshot to one backup folder at the backup location. Now next time when you are copying it, you check if the file already exists in the previous SS table. You just create a hard link on the new folder, the second backup directory, and if the file does not exist there, you copy it to the secondary backup directory. And that's how we support this count based backup. And that's all from my end. So the lesson here is, if you are backing up data from Cassandra cluster, you should not use the standard solution which Cassandra provides. You should try to take backup smartly if you want to avoid unnecessary network choking and disk IO. So any questions? Okay. Yeah.
Did you use not tool garbage collect sometimes?
No, we don't use that garbage collect command. But yeah, that can be used for reclaiming disk space as well. Yeah, that can be one of the issues, one of the ways. Yeah. Okay, then if there's no any other question, then thank you everyone.